recovering addicts. I don't know if you know anything about me, but I've been the pastor here for we're going into our fourth year here. Before that, I started my ministry in 2004. I got saved at the end of starting in 2005. I started ministering at a place called Providence Ministries, where I minister to people and drug and people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol or substances. What we did is we began to go down there on a voluntary basis, and then I went into full-time ministry at a boys' home, and then I was the director of what's called our master's camp, which is about 30 minutes north of here on top of the mountain over in Dayton. And I was the director there, and we worked with men that were struggling with drug addiction. So my heart has always been towards the drug addicted and their families. I've been ministering to people. It doesn't just affect the person who's using, it affects the family as well. And we'll get into that more as we go on. But I wanted to tell you there's two ways to learn. As a pastor of this church, I wanted you to know one thing. We don't believe you have to go through something traumatic to have a testimony. You can learn by choices, or you can learn by experience. Everybody on this stage up here, we learn by experience. And through our experiences, we want you to learn by your choices. We're going to tell you some stuff that happened to us, or they're going to tell you some things that happened to them, and I'm going to ask them and dig into the questions. So without anything else being said, that's kind of where we're at this morning. We know that drug addiction affects everybody. There's nobody in this auditorium this morning that doesn't know somebody who's drug addicted, struggling in a drug addiction, or has got a family member who's struggling with it. So we know we're not giving y'all something that we're like, what are you talking about? This is a very clear and present issue going on in our world today. First of all, I want to welcome these guys, Chris and Emmy and Mandy. They've chosen to get on this stage in front of all you and share their heart. They're all saved. They're all born again. But they're also all sober and clean. So y'all give them a round of applause for being here. Everybody, them, everybody, right? No, they're not real nervous. They're pros at this, so don't worry about that. If they throw up, it's just a response. All right, starting with whoever has the microphone first, and what we're going to do is we're going to try to give you the most answers and the most information we can, and then we're not going to avoid the Holy Spirit, okay? So if the Holy Spirit starts pulling us away, we're going to jump into that and go all the way we can, but we want to leave you here. We want you to leave here with as much information as you could possibly carry about drug addiction and what you can do to help yourself or help somebody else. With that being said, what was your drug of choice?
Meth and prescription pain pills.
Meth and prescription pain pills.
Alcohol, marijuana, and prescription pain pills.
How were you introduced to your drug of choice? When I say drug of choice, that's a term used in recovery. It's what substance you found, what substance you started using, and you used it on a regular basis. Didn't mean you didn't use anything else. It was just your kind of mainstay thing that kind of helped where you were at the most or what you thought was helping you the most.
I would say when I was younger, started smoking pot at parties, and then it just progressed from there.
Did you ask what the drug of choice? Yeah. Mine was probably meth, because it gave me energy to do and, you know.
How was it introduced to you? How did you get started?
Oh, my bad. Just by making the wrong choices, the wrong friends, the wrong, you know, I never went after, like, healthy, good relationships. I always went after, like, the messed up and, you know, just the group that I surrounded myself with.
Mandy, what was your introduction to your...
I'm going to try not to squall. Mine was my family. My dad gave me anything just so I could leave him alone. It started with alcohol when I was 9.
Say that again. How old were you?
I was 9.
Mandy's a different one for me. I've not even heard Mandy's full testimony. And when she came to me about being on the panel, I was like, what? Because I've not known her, you know, very long, but I didn't know, you know, I knew Chris and Emmy's background. So when Mandy came and she said it happened when I was a young child. So at 9 years old, she was introduced to alcohol, right? Or whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I have so much in common with that. I started using when I was 8 years old. You started drinking Crown Royal when I was 8. Mm-hmm. My mom didn't know it, but she was drinking Crown Royal and water. No, y'all get that later. So can't make him any jokes about the preacher drinking at the church. Okay, I got that. All right. What was your drug of choice? When you found your drug of choice, when you first started experiencing it, did it seem like the answer? And it kind of explained that. Did it seem like the answer?
For a lot of reasons. You know, I guess the euphoric feeling that it gave me, the feeling of being invincible. You know, I could stay up for days at a time and get stuff accomplished that I wanted to get accomplished. It just made me feel like Superman at first.
Yes, it did. It made me not have to feel. And I think that's the main thing. Like, it just masks everything, you know, and makes you... Like you, of course, it's not good, but it makes you feel like you don't have to, you know, realize reality. So that was the good part about it.
It makes you numb to everything that's going around. If it's somebody was physically hurting you or something, you had that as your escape. It would numb it, make you forget it for until you woke up.
I struggle with asking that question. I really, really struggle with that because I thought some folks in the church, and myself included, would go, why did you ask him something good about that? Because I want you to fully understand drugs and alcohol and any sin that you commit, anything that you might be addicted to, for a season seems good.
Yep.
For a season seems like the answer. Matter of fact, it seems better maybe than all the answers that everybody else has given you. You need to turn to the Lord. You need to come to church. You need to read your Bible. You need to pray. When you try this, what it does is it covers and masks the problems that you're having. Not every drug addiction starts just by partying. It a lot of times is to cover up hurt and pain. And if you'll listen to what they said, it makes you not feel. It makes you have a numbness where you used to have a pain. And for a lot of people, that's a good place. This is just good stuff. I hope you know. I struggled and wrestled with that question, so I wanted you to know that I'm glad y'all answered that. All right. Was there any event that you would share that most people wouldn't think that got you to using drugs even worse, that kept you going into drug addiction? Maybe, you know, most people think, well, he just kept partying and kept partying, that was it. Is there something deeper than that? Something, a hurt or a problem that's deeper than that?
I would say for me, my senior year in high school, my brother passed away from a motorcycle wreck, and you know, that's really when I started my partying. Before that, I was a straight A student. You know, I did everything that I was supposed to do. But when my brother passed away, I looked for everything and anything that I could find to hide the pain, like Emmy said, make me not have to, you know, to escape reality. And before I know it, I was so far in that I was so far in I couldn't kick it. I mean, it just kept growing and growing and growing.
I think I was already like partying, drinking, smoking pot, but my dad passed away when I was 19, and I think that kind of gave me an excuse. I can't say that I wouldn't have done it even if he hadn't passed away, but I feel like that was all I needed to have a reason to do it, you know?
I can't say one specific thing that just kept on being sexually abused by a stepdad, being told you were lying about it, And then having it readily available in the home just was something that you're at home with your mom and there's alcohol, so you drink it, and then you go to your dad's and he's, you name it, he's got it. And something most don't know, and I'm not proud of it, seventh grade I was in rehab for cocaine. It was something my dad just, we watched a movie and I thought it looked cool and he was like, well, here, you can have it. So seventh grade.
Now I want you to know that, did you hear what happened? That's a lot of times when you're talking to an addict, you think they just need to stop. What they're doing is they're covering up some of the pain that you can't see. And you would tell them to stop, but that's the only freedom they feel from the pain that they're going through, okay? So that it's really like a self-medication to a level, all right? Did any of you guys think that you would become an addict early on? When you thought, I want y'all to understand that, or let them understand. Did you ever have it in your mind that you would become an addict?
Never. I mean, I was just having a good time doing what my friends were doing. And, you know, I never thought it would grow into what it grew into.
No, I never thought. I was always the one that couldn't understand those women, you know, the girls that lost their kids or the girls that, you know, just everything. I was the one that would be like, I would never do that, you know, and absolutely I did every single thing I said I would never do.
When I first started, I was nine. I didn't know what an addict was. But you don't, if you grow up in it, you don't see it as a problem. You see it as, it was normal. It was just normal life.
What would you guys tell somebody who is just now, not somebody who's addicted, but somebody who is just now experimenting with alcohol, with pot, with just something, a substance they can be addicted to? What would you give, what kind of advice would you give them today?
It seems to cover up the problem. It seems to make you have fun, but it doesn't. It ruins not just your life, but your friends, your family, your future kids, your future grandkids. It's going to affect them in more ways than what you realize.
I would say, you know, you might just be having fun right now, but you continue doing it, it's guaranteed you're going to be addicted. It's guaranteed, you know. And if you just keep playing with it, and that's what I try to tell our youth all the time, there's going to come a point in time where it's not fun to you anymore and where it's just a habit and you have to do it. You know, I don't want that for any of them. So
I would say if you never try it, then you can never be addicted. So, yeah.
What would you tell someone who is struggling right now, sitting in this auditorium, who are struggling with addiction, they're using, they're struggling, they're using on a regular basis, they're using, and they can't stop? They say they can, but they can't stop. What would you tell them, from your point of view, what would you tell them right now?
Find somebody that you can trust that will hold you accountable. Talk to them. Tell them what you're doing. For me, I went a different route. I did a little jail time, and then I went to a halfway house. But I think for me, it was first thing I did was I sought after God, and then I went through rehab too. I don't think I could have done it alone. I remember me and Emmy leaving this church one day and going home. And we were sitting on the front porch, and I told her, you know, and I was telling God, I was like, God, you're going to have to do something because I cannot do this on my own, you know. And just my faith in God was not going to get me through it. I needed to be somewhere where I was held accountable, somewhere where I couldn't get to what I wanted to do or I couldn't get access to the drugs long enough to get it out of my system, and then I could rely on God.
I say surrender. Like, I literally fell on my face at this altar and just begged God to take it because I couldn't get rid of it. I didn't know how. But I feel like whenever you really fully are done and you surrender, God will pick you up and he will fix it. But you have to be willing and you have to want help. You have to want, you got to be done.
Everything they said, and you have to cut your friends.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, that's where it started with me. I wish I could say it started with God, but it was one of these. I had to cut every friend. I couldn't even keep the friends that my grandparents thought were the good influence. I had to cut every friend. I had to leave my hometown. I had to leave everything. You have to get away from it, but you have to want to get away. If you don't want to get away from that, you're gonna find it again. And then just surround yourself by people that can be there for you and just encourage you to do what's right and not judge you.
Drug addiction loves isolation.
Yes.
It loves to be isolated. It loves to be alone. And it loves when you keep it in the dark. Turn the lights on. Tell everybody. Yeah. Turn the lights on. Tell everybody. Get everybody involved. Takes the power out of it. So what they're saying in that. This is a very important next segment of this. Is going to be very important. Maybe you're a family member sitting here today and you're wondering, I've got a drug addict in my family, in my life. What do I do to help them? So I'm going to ask them this question. What did your parents do that kept you going in your addiction longer?
I guess the
parent, loved one, somebody. I don't want to throw it all on parents, but people who loved you, what some of the things they did that continued to prolong your addiction?
The enabling. My mom, my stepdad, and my dad, they all knew what I was doing, but I think it was they didn't want to actually admit what I was doing or actually face it. I could sit here and tell you numerous things of how my parents would pay my bills or pay mine and Emmy's bills, keep the lights on, buy groceries for the kids, and all the time they were doing that, we were taking the money that we had and we were spending it on drugs. I could go to my dad's and Dad, can I borrow $20 for this? And he would always give it to me. And I mean, I'm not saying it's their fault, it's more my fault because when you're a drug addict, you are not just a drug addict, but you are a master manipulator. I can manipulate anybody, anything, any scenario to my favor. But the enabling was a big part of it,
I agree with what Chris said, the enabling. But in addiction, what you have to understand is that you condition people to treat you a certain way. And that comes with, I don't really know how to go into detail with that, but you get people, the way that they treat you is because you've allowed them to treat you that way. And I know that sounds rough, but that's just how it is. And so whether it be parents, whether it be siblings, whether it be anything, the addict like Chris said, is a master manipulator and whatever it's going to take to get drugs or to get the money to have them. And, that's just what you do. And so you have to be willing to draw the line. You have to be willing to say enough is enough, no matter what, and love them enough to say no.
Mine's not like Chris and Emmy. I wasn't older. Was elementary, middle, high school. Mine was, my parents were divorced, and so if I knew if I acted up at my mom's, she would send me to my dad's. And so I would act up at my mom's, and she'd kick me out, and I'd have to go live with my dad. And I knew if I got to my dad's, if I said, hey, I want to go get drunk, he would go buy it. Hey, I want to do this, he would give it to me. There was the stipulations, but it was more of, my dad sold it, so hey, if you want this, you have to take this much of my product to this place, drop it off at this time, turn around and leave, and then I'll give you what you want. So it was more of that, of the...
What was something your loved ones, family members did that caused you to get well? Some things that they done that you at the time thought, man, this is the worst thing ever, but it turned out to be some of the best stuff they did. And listen to this. This is important right here. This is the important stuff.
This is something I didn't find out until my cousin passed away last year. I couldn't figure out why when I was 20, 21, none of my friends were coming around. None of my friends. I would call them, they'd say they're on their way. They would never show up, and I was like, what in the world? Maybe they're blowing me off. I found out last year when my cousin passed away that my uncle would sit in the driveway with a gun, and if any of my friends pulled in my driveway, he was shooting at them. He ran them off and would tell them to never come back. And my grandparents, they just, if they came to my house and they found it, it was flushed. It was, and at that point I was hiding it from them so they didn't know. I didn't want to disappoint them. That's not something I wanted to ever do. They saw their kids grow up in it. And it was I'm so disappointed. You're the one that I thought would not do this. I didn't ever think that you would do that. So just them stepping up and taking the place of the parent when they didn't have to.
Okay, I think more than anything it was when I lost custody of the kids. As much as I don't like to admit that, I feel like that was the make or break time. It was either get it together or your kids are gone forever. And, you know, there were a lot of things that I had to do to get them back. And, you know, one of them was staying clean. You know, I had supervised visitations for a long time. And I literally had to do every little thing. And if there's any women listen to this or hear, and you think it's just not worth how much you have to do to get your kids back, it is worth it. And you can do it. All you have to do is show a little bit of effort, a little bit. You don't have to do it perfect, but you get those kids back. They need you. They need their mom.
I would say when it's my mom, my stepdad finally cut me off, they said enough was enough. It was shortly after that I went to jail, and I did 15 months in jail. And it was during that time, you know, I would call home, and that's when my mom said, you're on your own, you know.
This question comes from Anna. How did this affect your families?
Today, I think it's made my family stronger, but in order to strengthen your family, I would not ever suggest that you take the route that we did. You know, my most vivid memory is going to my mom's to visit the kids, and Parker was probably 2, maybe. Anna's 6, and me and Emmy would go up there for like, I don't know, 30, 45 minutes, you know, just so we could say we were the parents of the year and we went to see our kids. And the whole time we were trying to rush to get out of there so we could go get high. And I remember leaving my mom. And Parker had like a death grip on my neck and it was screaming bloody murder. Don't leave me, don't leave me. And Anna takes Parker.
Can you repeat that question? That just took me. I'm sorry.
How did this affect your family?
Oh. It was horrible. I have an older son, Jacob, And he used to live with us part-time, like joint custody. And his dad took him and said no more. And that affected Anna Rose a lot. Parker was still pretty young, but that took her brother away from her, her big brother. There were a lot of things that I did throughout my addiction that destroyed every, at one time or another, everybody in my family, but my kids most of all. Love you.
It made me realize who family really is. I can tell you I have a dad, but I can tell you I've not seen my dad in 10 years by choice. I can tell you it made me realize that just because you parent somebody, just because you've gave birth to them, doesn't make you a parent. And your kids will see that. Your kids are going to see who their family really is. And just because you're blood doesn't make you anything. I was brought by my grandma that I love, and she's like a mom to me. And my grandpa that's not even my real grandpa. But he has always stood there, and he stood there on my wedding day when my family wouldn't even show up. So it shows you who your family really is, and it opens your eyes to the family you want to be, and it adds to your family.
Well, I like what you said right there. It shows you what kind of family you want to be. Yeah. It shows you what kind of family you want to be. What was your lowest point? What was your rock bottom? The place that got you to your biggest turning point? What people in recovery would call your rock bottom?
I would say November 26, 2011, about 2 o'clock in the morning. I was making meth in my garage, and it blew up. And I ran outside to hide in the backyard, and you know, the police came in, the drug dogs came in, they took me to jail, and I was thinking the whole time, you know, I'll be there for a week or whatever, and I'll get out. And as they were booking me in at Silverdale, I weighed 127 pounds. I'm a little over 6 feet tall, so I'm not by any means fat now, but I don't weigh 127 now, but I remember they handed me my box that had my blankets and all that in it and all my stuff to carry to my dorm. And I carried it about 10 feet. And I mean, that's all I could carry. I mean, I'd been up for maybe 10 days. You know, meth, you know, it's not good for the appetite. So during that 10 days, I probably hadn't eaten. And I remember the nurse telling me that if I did not gain some weight and gain some weight quickly, that they were going to send me to the hospital. You know, I'd already lost the kids. I'd already blew up my house. I'd lost everything. So, you know, go back to what Mandy said a minute ago. You know, I had a pastor come see me. Brother Mark used to be pastor here. And he said, you know, I've got good news for you. You only have to change one thing. And I said, what's that one thing? He said, everything. And that is so true.
I would just say again, my rock bottom was with the kids, and just seeing what, you know, when I did go to jail, and I had to look back, and once all the drugs get out of your system, and you actually think about, like, why am I here, what am I doing here, because when you're on that many drugs, you really don't get it. So if you have family members that call you from jail, and day one, day two, they have no idea. They're still high. They don't know. And so they have to have time to get off of everything and time to really get what it's really about.
I'm trying to think of, there was so many of what I would think would be rock bottom. But I didn't have to hit the rock bottom. I was young enough that I didn't have anything really to lose. I didn't have a house. I didn't have kids. But it was, I remember the day I got saved, it had been pounding on me. I was going to Pilgrim's Rest Church, and I went with Amy, and I went with Heather, and I went with Grandma, and I went with the doll, and I was playing the I'm saved, because I went through the motion at 9, thinking I was going to be protected, and then when you're not in this protection bubble that you think you should be in, I remember I pulled into Grandma and Dolls, and I was sitting there in the car, and I was like, if I can just make it through this one last thing, this one last thing, this one last thing. And Dot opened that door, and I saw him, and it just hit me so hard. I just fell down in the driveway, in the gravel driveway right there, and I was like, just take me. I can't do this anymore. I can't do this by myself. That's the day I got saved. I can't remember the exact date because the days just carry on together. I'm not going to say I haven't struggled since then. I'm not going to tell you that I've not went back to alcohol. I've never went back as far as I was. But I did. I mean, you're going to slip. You're going to trip. You're going to stumble along the way. But you have to get back up. You have to let God pick you back up.
My next question was going to be, how did God come to be your Savior through all of this? So Mandy jumped ahead.
I would say it was one of those moments where me and Emmy were being parents of the year again. We would come to church because my mom and stepdad had custody of our kids, and we would come to church so we could see the kids or whatever. And man, I remember that whole service. I mean, I had like a death grip on that pew. I'm not going up there. And then it seemed like, I don't know what happened, but I came up here and I was right there on the altar, and Brother Gene was praying with me. And when I stood up, Emmy was on that altar. And I mean, it was crazy. And that's like I said, when I got home, I told Emmy, I was like, what do we do now? You know, I mean, I know something's different, but I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do it. So,
and I think, like, just to add on to what Chris said, like, if you're battling with addiction and you get saved, like, it's not a walk in the park after that. But if you truly, truly surrender, God will help you every single day. Every single day, God will help you not get high, not you know, drink, not whatever your addiction is. But you have to fully believe that he can do it. And when you're so broken, you have nothing else to believe in, you will believe that God can do it because you know that's the only hope you have.
I already did.
Oh.
Okay, I love testimonies, and a lot of times testimonies talk about what happened, how bad it was, how God met you, and then it's kind of like you always fall back to that. I got saved on this day. I got saved on this day. And, you know, that could go back 10 years, 5 years, 3 years, 10 years. So I was sitting here praying within myself and saying, God, how do you want me to end this with these guys? What I'm going to ask them to do at this point, I'm going to ask them to share what they're doing today in our church. What they're doing right now. These three people, what they're doing in their church. Because a lot of people say, well, are they still going to recovery meetings? This? No, but they are serving and working and helping and ministering to others. And I want you to see what these three are doing today in our church. And I want you to know this. They are a big part of our ministry in our church here. And I just want you to know, I want you, them to share what they're doing today and in what capacity they work here at our church.
I'm a youth leader here at this church. We have roughly 20-something kids that we go on trips out of town, take the youth with us. I do Awana on Sunday nights, and every once in a while I fill in and teach Sunday school.
I do youth, and then we also help. I'm an Awana secretary, and is that it? think that's it. But I do want to say, we do not go to meetings anymore, but I do feel like it's important to, when you get sober, to work those steps. It's important to be accountable, and it's important to grow your relationship with God. And as long as you're doing stuff for other people, you won't be as focused on your own problems. And that is so key to doing this and keeping, you know, doing what you're supposed to be doing. Do stuff for other people. Tell them what your struggles are and tell them how, you know, just try to help them through theirs.
I teach beginner Sunday school class, ages 2.5 to 5 or 6. I am over nursery and the toddler church. And this year, I got drafted to do VBS.
As a preacher here, I struggle. I think my answer to everything is preach to it. I think if there's an issue, there's trouble, I preach to it, preach to it, preach to it. And this morning I got up and I thought, man, I'm like, it's going to be hard to give a whole service away and not preach to it. But I hope you understand this. They just preach to you. This is a real live message with real characters who really met Jesus, who are really in a struggle. And you might not be having a struggle right now. You should be one of the first people up here on this altar saying, thank God that I'm not on drugs, or somebody in my family's not on drugs or alcohol. But you might be sitting here struggling in your addiction, and this would be a place for you to come and surrender your life to Christ and surrender your addiction to Him. And you might be a family member here right now, and you're sitting here going, what can I do? Well, they gave you some answers. Sometimes the hardest things to do is be the toughest, or the toughest things to do, is to say, I won't support your addiction by giving you stuff that will prolong it. So I'm going to ask everyone here to stand. I'm going to ask Brooke to come. You guys can stay up here. You can get out either way. Huh? Okay.